Nerd Appropriate presents exclusive coverage of the BioWare base, recorded live at PAX Prime 2013.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. As you'll notice, this is not a numbered podcast. We're doing a whole special series for you.
Yeah, we're going to be bringing you a total of 12 different podcasts recorded live at the BioWare base this year's PAX Prime. So make sure to click subscribe and enjoy.
So thank you guys for dealing with our technical difficulties. I've got to hold this mic way down here. This is the art and design panel. Is it the art and design of Dragon Age or just the art and design panel?
I think this is just art and design at BioWare.
Okay, good. So the art and design, design at BioWare. Do you mind if
all
I
of
just
us.
Put my juice right there? No, don't hold it. I'm not a diva.
Or I can hold the microphone.
No, oh my gosh. No. So thank you for dealing with our technical difficulties. We are so cool that we blew out a fuse. So I'm going to let everyone introduce themselves, but thank you guys so much for coming. There's a million things to do at PAX, and we feel so fortunate that you decided to come spend time here with us. We've got a full weekend packed full of activities, and I'm just going to go down the row and just tell us who you are and your favorite weapon that you would use if someone came charging through the room and you had to not kill them, but just get them down.
Okay.
And then it'll be under our chair.
Does this work? Steve Gilmore, I'm the lead animator on Dragon Age. I would use a blunderbuss full of rock salt or a paintball gun with frozen water pellets.
Yes, one of those two.
I'm Michael Leal, combat designer on Dragon Age, and I would use a taser shotgun. I just learned of this recently. Taser shotgun, it shoots bullets, which electrocutes you. Amazing.
Nice. My name is Josh Sixma. I'm a gameplay designer. I would probably just go for the biggest two-hander I can find.
Good answer. I'm Matt Rhodes, lead concept artist on Dragon Age. I'd go for mechanical pencil just because I always have them handy. So.
Wow.
My name is Sebastian Hanlon. I'm the lead combat designer on Dragon Age. I'm thinking bear spray.
Mm. Non-lethal, but cruel.
Yeah. Yeah.
My name is Mark Wilson, lead technical designer on Dragon Age, and I'd use Josh.
He's big.
My name is Matt Berner. I'm a gameplay designer on Dragon Age. I would probably use a brick wall. Just let them run into themselves. That's fine.
I'm Matt Goldman. I'm the art director for Dragon Age. I disavow weaponry. I use my mind.
The most dangerous weapon of them all.
I'm Graham Scott. I'm a level designer on Dragon Age Inquisition. I would use a hockey stick.
Cross-check to the mouth.
I'm Tyler Lee. I'm the UI lead, and I'd like to use a rubber chicken.
So we're on a panel with some pretty crazy people. So keep that in mind, because we're going to have a Q&A portion at the end, so think about that. So I've been thinking about this. What is the weirdest part of your job when you're up in Edmonton? Or Montreal, if any of you are up in Montreal. Speak in French or not speak in French. I've never been to Montreal because no one will let me go there. What are some weird things about your job in art and design that you can can share, because there's lots of things that we can't share, ha, secrets, that you might, we might not know as fans?
I can think of one right off the bat. As much time as you can spend drawing Inquisitors and Dragons, you also find yourself lovingly rendering the cod pieces on armor. Or just buckets, and it strikes you, I'm spending this afternoon drawing a bucket. And it's not weird, but it's kind of strange, mundane.
For like player abilities and stuff, we're always working with animators, and we're coming up with like, so what's this action going to be? So we'll go out onto the field and like have a sledgehammer, videotape ourselves, like doing really weird actions. And I'm sure everyone driving by is like, what are these weirdos doing over there? Yeah.
I bought the sledgehammer.
I think doing acrobatic type stuff in the office as we like do player abilities, quite literally like trying to like jump over a desk to figure out what it would be like to do different things. And fail sometimes.
Yeah. Yes.
I came up under a desk once, which was not intentional.
It's the onlooker effect where you've got the lingo and you're just completely talking to someone about something that both of you know intimately, and whoever is sitting around who doesn't know gives you the weirdest looks, even within the office, but sometimes without. Yeah,
riding the elevator with the people from the engineering firm is pretty fun.
I totally chopped that guy's face off.
Yeah, I had to remind somebody to take their medicine at lunchtime. That was pretty good, and I like our job because my boss kind of got up in my face, so I gave him a wedgie, and I ripped the band right off. I didn't get into trouble or anything.
Okay. I was not expecting any of those things. So I'm really interested. You hear art and design, and you don't necessarily, the first thing that jumps into your mind isn't necessarily story. But could you tell me how story, because when you think BioWare, you think story. Could you tell me how story plays into the day-to-day or the overarching aspect of your jobs?
Mm-hmm. Well, I this is actually probably my favorite part of the whole job is there's story, so there's explicit storytelling, and then Matt and I get together and nerd out over the kind of the setting, and we talk about like local architectural vernacular or self-referential art styles that you know help illustrate the psychology behind a certain culture or something like that. So it's not exactly like that guy said this and then that guy went over there and then a thing happened. It's all of the kind of implicit backstory behind it and trying to create a sense of mood and space. That's really super fun.
Yeah, also with level design, I think.
Graham.
Maybe share Matt's mic.
There we go. Close.
Now you have
hello?
Some mics. Yep, that one's good.
Oh, yeah.
With level design, I think we have an interesting opportunity to tell story through layout, through prop placement, through the things that the player is actually seeing and interacting with, being able to set up situations where you come into a room and if the roof is torn open and a light shaft is shining on a table and there's a corpse kind of splayed across it. We can set up things where the player isn't necessarily told through a conversation or dialogue, but they can kind of piece together a story in their mind for what actually happened. So I think that's how level design can kind of tie into a story.
One of the things that we did fairly early on Inquisition, once we knew sort of who the followers were going to be, and sort of where writing wanted to take it, we had big brainstorm sessions where we'd bring in the combat designers and you know the VFX guys and the animators and then the writers who were working on each of these characters, and we had sort of big back and forth discussions about, okay, so you know we know that, that this character, we think he should have this kind of combat role, and then, you know, okay, so the animators want to do it like this, and then the writers, okay, well, can't really do that because of this thing that we've established with this character earlier, or there's this thing we want to do with him in the story later. And so it was a really interesting process of sort of trying to come up with you know, abilities and with sort of the presentation for each of these followers, in a way that supported the story and that really made that character work together as an integrated unit, rather than saying, okay, well, he's a warrior, okay, so we're gonna give him all the warrior stuff, okay, but you know, we want to make sure that these characters support the writing and the story and the character, so that it all comes together as a big unit.
It is fairly collaborative, so sometimes, like from the tech design point, we'll prototype a mechanic and we'll make sure the gameplay is fun, and then like work with writing to make sure that it fits within Dragon Age, but not sacrificing story for the sake of gameplay or vice versa. It's, hey, this is really fun. Is there anything that we can do with it to make it special to Dragon Age? And yeah, that's kind of cool when some of those ideas come together.
Yeah, I was going to say it's basically the same thing with creatures. You start iterating on this like really cool creature A, and then you sort of just start, wait a minute, we should probably check with Dave Gator and make sure this is okay. So you run over to the writer's office, they're like, yeah, we can work with that. And you're like, okay. And then you go back working with the concept artist and continue on.
And how do you deal with some of the technical limitations that you have to overcome? I mean, you have to deal with some things within the engine. You have to deal with things like scale. I know there's always the joke about how Shale is like a little mini golem, and things like that are those kind of challenges that you have to overcome. Where does that come into play?
I would say, to a point, we try to work with those limitations at all levels. Like, story-wise, Luke was saying at the previous panel that as writers, they need to know what the technical limitations are. So, like, you know, there's no point writing something if we can't actually do it. And I think the same goes for everybody. There's, you know, Steve has helped rein me in as far as what I draw on a character, because it's like, there's no way anyone in the world can animate that. And so it's like, you know, we help kind of trim things back. And it's this kind of constant negotiation. And you know, it's like a mage robe is a particular shape and has its technical limitations, and so we try to lift things up or move things around, and that becomes the language, that becomes the setting. So it's kind of born out of that back and forth.
Yeah, at the same time, though, you guys, like our concept artists, I mean, we've had this discussion where we intentionally try to not limit what they put into our characters and the design, so that maybe we get an opportunity to kind of push the technology a little bit and do something that maybe we haven't done before. And, you know, it's kind of a balance between what's technically possible and also what people are uncomfortable doing. Everybody gets used to doing the same thing over and over again. Part of our job as, you know, leads is to kind of push them and push for new technologies and new ideas. And, you know, you don't want to sit still. You always want to be trying to challenge yourself and be... Being afraid, feeling afraid, is actually a good place to be. So.
Is there any other burning questions that I should ask you guys before we open it up to the audience questions? Let's get your questions. I'm going to run down and be the champion. If you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will just run to you, and don't be intimidated. And because the mic's a little, you don't have to eat this mic. Okay, I'm gonna walk around. I'm just gonna put it in your face. So someone better raise their hand. Thanks.
Right, so I've heard about the agents, and I was just kind of wondering how in depth maybe you could go into how that's gonna work. Like, is it just you give your little companion like an mission to accomplish, and they come back later and tell you how they did it, or are you going to be playing through them through that mission, or is that something we can't talk about?
I think that falls under can't talk about yet.
Can't talk about yet.
Excited to.
But, yeah, I don't think we can go into any detail there. Sorry. Yet. Sorry.
Running.
So have you ever had a character that you were designing that was going to be like a smaller character in the background
for one game, and then you're like, oh, every time I draw this, I'm really into it. And then the art actually directs the story that way, where it becomes a bigger character?
I know there have been characters that were really intriguing in Origins, and I'm not sure exactly what happened on the writing side. Maybe a writer can fill me in on this, but like Isabella was triggered, and it was just like, let's bring her forward, and it was the opportunity to come in and say, like, in Origins, she was made out of what was available, and now that we're really going to tell her story and expand on her, we could address, like, who she is in the story, and let's give her a fighting style. We'll give her, like, what kind of combat role would she fulfill, and like, what kind of costume would a character like this wear based on her experiences and that kind of thing. So those opportunities are really great, especially when you're working with pre-existing ones. And even now, I just did a concept for a character from Origins that is getting similar treatment that I won't elaborate on, but it's like, it's really great because you can it's just, you know, you the yeah, characters that people like came across or really loved, you know, it's a blast.
My question's about combat design. Just mentioned like going out into the field and swinging weapons at each other. Do you guys get to do crash courses in medieval weaponry? And do you have backgrounds in like martial arts or any combat or anything like that?
So we don't. I don't know if anyone's actually got any crash courses in medieval weaponry. A few of us do have martial arts backgrounds and stuff. Yeah. Like I used to take Taekwondo and like black belt in that. And
I took Kendo for 3 years.
The problem with And I've looked at a lot of the medieval systems. The problem with it is there's what I call reality and theatrical reality. The reality doesn't look as good as it needs to. It's not as big as it needs to be. It's the same problem with motion capture. Motion capturing very good stunt actors, when you actually get the animation back, they look like they're underwater. They're slow. They're not exciting. And that's kind of the challenge. We have to actually amp it up and make it theatrically sound. So it's kind of a different challenge. Like, those systems would help you in a real fight, but we're not really making real fights. We're making gameplays.
There actually were some really neat meetings that we had where we got people from combat design, visual effects. We had some concept artists there for storyboards where we talked more about the spirit of combat. Like, the idea of, like, okay, for Dragon Age, like, what is a rogue at its core? And we kind of broke it down right from the base again and talked about, like, how do they move? What are they about? Like, how do they relate to their weapons? And, like, what kind of, you know, and so everyone could kind of pitch in, and VFX was like, oh, I could do that really easily, and we kind of go back and forth.
Hi. Well, I have a technical question. I was curious what programs or techniques you use for texturing your models.
Okay, well, obviously, Photoshop, we're moving into more physically based rendering stuff, so photography is important, especially for environments. Actually, authoring shaders, various different engines have different ways of wiring that up, so DICE or Frostbite has one, but it's similar because math works in a certain way, so if you know how to, I don't know how it works, but I hear there's numbers and rules to it or something. You have to plus before you divide or whatever. But
the math.
So if you've used Unreal or Crytek or something, there's a way of lacing together all those nodes and you get certain effects. So that's pretty important. And there's Endo for creating normal maps, cavity maps. CDO is a new thing that they made that also can poop out diffuse textures for you. So you can actually create it in ZBrush. You can actually completely texture it up in there. You don't even have to use Photoshop if you don't want to. Yeah.
I have actually two questions, one for Sebastian, one from Graham. For Sebastian, you mentioned earlier the combat design for actually mixing the character with the skills it actually uses. How do you strike a balance between giving a character a style within its combat and actually allowing the player flexibility in making its party?
So I can't go into a lot of details about what we're doing specifically on Inquisition, but if you look at the way we built our characters in DA2, all of our followers had basically a standard set of abilities that belonged to their class and that work with their weapons, and then we gave each character a smaller set of abilities that were their specific talents, so that they have the general set and then they have a specific couple things that they can do that are just their own.
And for Graham, is there a particular kind of biome that you missed that you would have liked to work with in Inquisition that you didn't get to?
Do you mean like from previous Dragon Age games?
In general, you know, a particular biome, say snowy fields or etc. that you didn't get to work on?
Mm-hmm. Kind of a tricky question.
sure is. That's a clever one.
The moon.
So if
too smart.
If you were paying attention to some of the Game Informer videos that went out, we started giving some indication of the breadth of the variety of different types of areas that you're going to see in Inquisition. Mm-hmm. I can't really go into too much detail about all of those. Different locations, but there is a very large range of different biomes and stuff. This is actually, I've only been on the Dragon Age franchise for a year. I was actually previously on the Mass Effect team. But I will say that there's some pretty awesome stuff. More to come in the future.
I'll run around.
Zero-G space. We haven't done any Jovian atmospherics.
Have we covered space? space travel?
So I'm not sure if you can actually say anything, but in the video you mentioned stuff about open world. So I was just wondering if you can talk at all about how the design, the level design, the art has had to change based on developing something for a more open world game design system, as opposed to how you had more kind of linear paths in the previous products?
That's an awesome question. That is a very awesome question.
Because I'm a game developer.
I'd say it's kind of like we've all just been able to stretch a little bit. But there's one phrase that I've liked what Matt has said, and that's that, and correct, you're here so you can correct me if I butcher it, but that geology determines history, or geography determines history, I mean.
Topology.
So, you know, the idea that... Perfect.
Anology. Ologies are important.
This is why he's the art director. But that it's like the landscapes, people just build in certain ways on landscapes, and like rivers are important. Like there's a way that people react. Like there's a logical place to build a fortress. There's a logical place to put a road. And by having Frostbite and being able to create these big, broad, expansive areas, it gives us more of that ability to create natural spaces that are believable in that way that, like, you know, if I go downhill from here, there's going to be a river. There's, you know, that's going to lead to something, and
it brings with it its own set of challenges.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Animation-wise, we have basically, for our exploration animation, it's the most complex system we've ever built, by far.
But the funnest part, again, is, like, the sense of exploration. It's like, I can get over there, and there's the main path, and then there's, like, all of the little shortcuts, you can go here and there, and you get rewarded for, you know, going off the beaten path. So if you go this way, it's harder. You know, you have to figure out how to get up there, and, you know, probably something's going to eat you a couple times before you actually get through. But there's all kinds of different interconnections to it. So that's been a learning process. We continue to get better at that.
Brief preview for the Inquisition strategy guide is leave the path. Yeah, it's been really fun to place all the extra gameplay right outside of those linear constraint moments. It's like, mm-hmm. Hey, this area is wide. Like that's cool up there. I enjoyed that. It's a completely blank space that the artist created an hour ago, but I enjoyed going up there. What else can we do with it?
It's meant for us too. Just speaking back to the concept side, that like we had to reorganize how we thought about designing this stuff, because we had to move to a system where we were designing whole factions, so that you could create these distinct cultures and peoples that would live in different areas, so that in one area you could see like that wagon
belongs to this group, and so you can tell that they're here. And it just like it got so complex and beautiful. It was so fun just to geek out on every little detail.
So I apologize if you've answered this question already. I came in late. So in Dragon Age 2, it seems like there was a decision to go with a small number of very beautifully designed environments that get reused rather than a large number of perhaps more generic environments. I was just curious if you guys could go into a little detail as to that decision.
Where am I looking?
Sorry.
Hey. Over there. Well, let me tell you about the decision. I mean, that was, I'll be honest, that was largely a time constraint. So because we wanted to tell a more personal story, it made sense to try to detail, you know, up some areas that would change over time. But we're not looking backwards. Inquisition is going to be a large number of beautifully designed areas, a large number of large beautifully designed areas.
I am a programmer, and I understand that engines, the choice of an engine is very important to a game, because each engine has its strengths, but also has its weaknesses. And a lot of the press you guys have done so far on Inquisition has been focused mostly on the strengths and the cool stuff you can do by using the Frostbite engine, instead of your older engines, which you are perhaps more familiar with. And I'm just wondering if you are allowed to, say, expound at all on any limitations you've hit based on the Frostbite engine or things that you can't do as much. Of course, for example, we're all concerned about the moddability of the game, given that BioWare has in the past been very open to the modding community and whether Frostbite will support this.
Traditionally it's an FPS engine. And moving to an RPG, there's all those systems that just don't exist even conceptually within it. So BioWare, we've spent a lot of time building that in. And now that the studio's on Frostbite, that helps all the teams as well as any other EA studios on Frostbite. It is actually a really big collaborative community. So it's, hey, we think we need this tech. An email goes out and 800 people receive that email from all the different teams and projects and talk about how they might want to do it. And often one team will just put their hand up, and a couple of months later, you've got this system come back into the main line. So it has actually been really cool in that way.
We have experience at it, too, because Unreal was the same thing when Mass Effect started. We had to add a bunch of RPG systems to it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to make all kinds of wild promises, but I can't. I would just say that, one of the key advantages of using Frostbite is that when we build stuff into it, we get to keep that. Right, nobody can suddenly change the license agreement, and other teams benefit from that. And we've benefited from code like Need for Speed had made code that improves the streaming or allows you to lay down roads. We can use that. Each team is adding its piece, so we're adding all kinds of support for user interfaces. We're adding all kinds of support for cinematic tools, and each of the teams that are using that get to, you know, continually build and improve on this thing. So there is there's a 1,000 people using this engine, all internally, and we're rolling that technology back into Super Engine, kind of.
And it's a good excuse to go to Sweden every now and then.
Totally awesome excuse to go to Sweden.
So we have time for a few more questions. All right, sorry, more geography. You're happy we're right here.
Hi, so BioWare is known for having very well-rounded, diverse characters. And a lot of other companies have stated things like they don't feel comfortable creating characters that are not from their own experiences, or that sometimes I've actually heard people say that they didn't find that it was important to the story in terms of telling the story they wanted to tell. So what would be, given your success doing this, what would be your response or advice to people who have this belief and this like uncomfortable feeling towards that?
I read a great article by Brad Bird where he talked about VFX today in movies, where you can go and buy an amazing explosion at 5 or 6 different VFX houses. And the problem is that if you don't care about the characters, you don't care about the explosion. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, what he's saying is that characters really come first, and people that are afraid of characters or willing to put them somehow on a lower shelf or a lower tier, I think are making a grave error. And, you know, immersion comes from different things, but all reality TV, all television, all soap operas, they're all character-based, all of it. That's all they have, really, when you think about it. So characters, to us, are incredibly important, and they have to be there. That's part of why our games are our games. So.
And, I mean, to the diversity angle, I mean, I'm a straight white guy. So, I mean, obviously, I don't have a lot of the lived experience of, you know, of writing a female character or you know, again, straight white guy right here. But at the same time, you know, if you put something together and you show it to somebody who is from that experience, you need to be able to take their feedback to heart and I mean, obviously, we have a lot of diverse people in our audience, and to some degree within our company. And getting that feedback and really listening to what people are saying, whether it's positive or negative or corrective feedback. That's the only way that we can get better at making these kind of games and building these kind of characters, so that we are speaking to our whole audience.
Anyone else? Nope.
Run in. Hi. I was just wondering how you prioritize, like, the refinement of the art in different places. Like, how do you decide if you're going to spend the next few hours working on this cod piece versus, you know, a few hours?
That's a given, actually.
Always choose the cod piece.
And do those decisions come more top-down or bottom-up? Is it
I think just to tie it back to the previous one, it comes from our love of storytelling, and that everyone in the company is essentially working to support that. And so, you know, there's the story that we want to tell, the themes we want to create, you know, even if it's the story in the environment, or it's even getting into a bit of combat where it's like it's telling you something about the world. But I think there are some areas that you just know are going to be stronger opportunities to tell that story.
I mean, our QA lead gave me an interesting fact the other day, which is 60% of our bugs come from the team itself. So I would say how we decide is we just play the game a lot. We have a professional quality assurance team that does content testing. And we're all looking for things that are wrong with it, but we're also making subjective calls about what could be better. And sometimes our list, you know, we start off with a list. We're going to make all these dragons. And then this dragon was, you know, like Dragon 11, but it turned out to be the best one. So we start improving that, and, you know, there's kind of an organic element to it, because you can't just schedule inspiration. Sometimes something happens you weren't expecting, and you go, wow, man, that's amazing. We need some more of those. So mostly you got to, you know, critique yourself, and everybody, you know, the most knowledgeable people about the game are the people that are working on it, and we kind of decide what we want to do as we're going along. I mean, we obviously have a plan, but when we play it, that's how we make decisions, and we can get, like, increasingly granular as we get further towards shipping it, obviously.
On the flip side to that, sometimes, even if you're feeling really passionate about working on a cod piece, you do have to polish a dragon.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Butcher, I think it was Frank Herbert quote, but it was basically like, even the days where he felt like he had writer's block, when he finishes the book and reads it back, he couldn't tell which days they were. There is self-discipline involved. It's not just, hey, I feel like working on whatever today. Like, ultimately, you are still all making the same game.
In a lot of cases, too, we do have review processes, so we'll actually sit in a theater and play the game together and just, like, talk back and forth, like, how can we make this better? How can we make this cod piece shine? Mm-hmm.
Frostbite does wonders with that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Such a good shader.
Sorry, I got stuck.
My badge got trapped. It's not as bad as when I literally tripped over because my boot got stuck yesterday. All right, so you get the last question.
I make it wonderful.
So anytime there's an RPG character that the player is meant to step into and assume the role of and kind of supplant their own personality and decision-making into the character, I find that in some games, those characters, those main characters, tend to lack a personality so that the player can put their own personality into them. But I find that I appreciate the character more if they have a little bit of personality of their own. That was one thing that I appreciate about Commander Shepard, is even though you're making all the choices and you lean towards Renegade or Paragon, Shepard did seem to have his or her own personality in addition to the choices the player is making. So how does your team decide how far to go with giving Shepard or Hawk or the Inquisitor or whomever a personality, and how much personality to leave out so that the player can put their own there?
That is a good question.
I kind of it's a shame we don't have. I don't think we have. Do we have any writers? Right. They would probably be the most elegant.
Let's answer that.
Let's answer this on behalf.
See what we can do.
But I think the dialogue wheel, like, ultimately the writers have to write a response. So you get to pick, you know, a response to a situation that is sort of between you and the game, and then you hear the voice acting, which is a completely different line. And that's where I think that personality starts to grow. And it's just the nature of that dialogue wheel and using that thing. I think you're kind of forced to find a balance between what the player thinks is going on and then how the character interacts with the world.
I think to tie back into what we were just saying last time too, though, there's that fact that, like, we all play it. We all play it kind of continuously. And I think after a while, even out of the team, out of what the writers are doing, a personality does sort of develop. And you can kind of tell, occasionally it has happened, where, like, a line of dialogue just is like a thorn in everybody's side, and they're just like, this just isn't right. It's not working. And the writers can rework it. And
Inquisitor calling. That was infamous.
Uh-huh. I like that line.
It was funny, and then it got, mm-hmm. like, a thorn in your brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it got funny again.
To tie that, actually...
And then it got ruined.
To tie that back into art and design, it does actually... You guys... do, though, Matt actually blew my mind. I think it was last PAX when you were talking about some of the thought that you put into Aveline's apron.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if you guys could talk about when you're doing actual design work, mm-hmm. when you're thinking about the characterization or some of the, I think it was, again, I'm just thinking about Chris Schoenberg because, or Ray Lane, because I'm obsessed with both of those. When they were thinking about the story of putting turrets in specific places for the actual story of going through, and you can have certain characterizations in design and art. Could you speak a little to that? Because I think it does tie back into your question.
I would say I think we're all kind of in love with what Tolkien called secondary belief, which I think is a better term than suspension of disbelief, where it's just creating a world that you can believe in, and part of it is just immersing ourselves in it every day. I mean, the Aveline one was, well, that was how David Gator and I learned how to talk, like, to one another in a really good way. I think that was a big point for us, that, like Aveline's apron was, she was coming from Ferelden, she was a refugee, like, they were all refugees, and the idea was that she's a strong woman who's capable, she's able to be a warrior, so it would make sense, we'll just tell a little story and say that she was out blacksmithing, like she was fixing some horseshoes or she was doing something, but like that gave her that showed off that strength. So that apron was just like something she would have been wearing while doing that, and then holy crap, there's Darkspawn, no time, run. And so you kind of look for those opportunities to just put that backstory in there.
Yeah, even in the creature design, like when we come up with what the role of a creature is and what the themes are, we spend a lot of time just talking about, like, so how do we really accentuate that? Like, does this action actually sell that off? How do we play that up? Of, like, this guy's supposed to be, you know, the big boss, and like you have to be scared of him. He's going to smash through the wall and stuff.
Sometimes it's easy things, like, okay, this guy throws bombs at you, so where's he getting them from?
Yeah.
But sometimes it's more subtle things. And
so what about the characterization of the Nugs then?
It's all about the fingers. The important thing about the Nug is those creepy little fingers.
Baby
fingers.
sticky little baby hands.
Yeah. Yeah. They're for grasping.
Okay, well, someone else has to say something now because we can't we can't stop on baby hands.
Sure we can.
All right, well, baby hands, okay. Okay, well, thank you guys so much. I want to give time for portfolio review, and if anyone brought anything that they want these guys to sign, we have some time. We have some time now. We always feel that it's important when we go to PAX to give artists the time to get their portfolios reviewed. If you brought your portfolio, come on up here, and we will try to assign you to someone who kind of fits your portfolio to the best of our abilities. And let me know if you have something that you'd like to get signed, and we'll try to make that happen as well. Cool. Thank you, guys.
And that brings us to the end of this episode's BioWare-based panel coverage. We hope you enjoyed listening.
Thank you so much. You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate or Facebook /NerdAppropriate. Email us directly. That is Matt, Hillary with one L, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. And we have over 100 episodes to check out. So definitely subscribe and let us know what you think. Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone.